You're listening to Booth Talk from the After Movie Diner. And on this episode, we're excited to talk to actress, producer, composer, musician, and America's favorite, most prolific, and most recognizable screen queen, Linnea Quigley. Lovely. Thanks ever so much for agreeing to be on the show, Linnea. Thank you for this.
Oh, I know. Even with all the troubles, it's worth it.
Well, let's hope so. let's hope it's a good experience for you. You must do a million of these. So thank you ever so much for being so generous with your time. So let's kick off. My first question. So Linnea, is it better being America's number one scream queen than just another American sweetheart? Scream queens have got to have more fun, right?
Yes. The Scream Queens just want to have fun, right. I would say. That's got to be another song that I do. I think it's better to be a Scream Queen because you have more longevity. Otherwise, you're just another actress who hits their plateau and then just goes away.
Right.
But with the Scream Queen, you're kind of remembered like with that kind of cult status forever.
Yeah, because you build up a fan base, and horror and cult fan bases seem to be wonderfully loyal.
They are very loyal, yes.
So what does it mean being a scream queen to you? And was it something that you always set out to be, or you happily grew into it?
I never set out to be it because I was just really shy. It was something that I would have wanted to do when I was younger because my friends and I would watch the Creature Feature, which would be on Saturday nights at midnight, and would reenact the deaths and, you know, some of the lines of the movies, and just like watch The Birds with Alfred Hitchcock Birds, and try to scare my friends when they'd walk home. And, and you know, just I just loved horror, and I wanted to be in it, be the, you know, the girl that was like, you know, winning over the men and getting away. I didn't want to end up being in a wax museum, but I wanted to, you know, take over and break out of the bondage of the horrible villain and save the day.
Right. Yeah, I noticed you've often portrayed a sort of tougher, but you're not a scream queen that's, you know, happy to just be a victim. You play a sort of tougher, stronger, you know, role model role almost, you know, in some of the performances. Was that intentionally from you, or did you just find that in the writing of the movies?
That was intentionally from me because when I first started out, I was the victim. I was the girl that would run and fall, and then the axe would come down on my head. And you don't live very long in the movies, but then David Dakota got me a script, Sorority Babes in the Slimeball Bowl-O-Rama. And I got to play a very tough chick. And then in Return of the Living Dead, I got to play kind of a tough chick. So it was something that I wanted really bad and put out there in the universe. And it luckily came back to me.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Because what it does is it sort of, it takes away that exploitative element sometimes that are in women's roles in horror and cult movies. And you kind of own it. You know what I mean? You then take charge of that appearance, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, and everybody remembers the girl that was like tough or you know, would go after the monsters or the demons, whereas they wouldn't really remember the girl that just died in the film.
Yeah, although, you know, arguably, even in your early roles where you might have a small performance where it might end up with a death, people remember those, you know, quite vividly, quite iconic in a way. Which is good, because this leads on to my next question. This episode is going to be our Christmas episode. So this is our seasonal episode.
Oh, a memorable death.
Yes, we're covering Silent Night, Deadly Night, which is going to be 30 years old next year, which is incredible, right?
It.
Yeah. So let's talk about that film. How did you get your part in that?
I went to a audition with Stanzi Stokes as the casting director, And it's kind of vague because I went on so many auditions and got turned down so many times. And I went on this one, and probably one of the things that they wanted was a girl that was lightweight, because they had to lift her up so many times doing the antlers scene.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, my acting and then also being of slight build, I got the part. So I was really happy. I didn't think it would be this outrageous movie that mothers heckled and everything, and yeah, that it would be such a hit, and there'd be 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 of them. I was really shocked about that.
Yeah, had you known that, you would have said, can I come back in 2 as a zombie or something?
Oh, yeah, I definitely would have. I would have said, well, I did come back in 2 because it was a flashback, I think.
Yes.
But what I've heard, the whole movie was a flashback.
The first 45 minutes or something, or 35 minutes, is a flashback, and then after that it becomes a very odd movie.
Oh, now that's very strange. Yeah. That's very strange. From what I remember, I think the director was not a horror director. I think he did the Grizzly Adams movies or something, if I remember.
I'm not, funny enough, I've got a good friend of mine who is a filmmaker in his own right up in Massachusetts, and he knows Part 2 much better than I do, so I couldn't answer that, unfortunately. I mean, I'm a big fan of Part 1 and have seen it many times. We saw it recently for this episode in the Fangoria screening in New York, but I've only seen Part 2 maybe once or twice, so I don't know about the director, unfortunately.
Right. I can understand why you don't study much of that.
No, it's the second one has become famous for the garbage day bit, because he goes around with a revolver or a handgun shooting at people in the street saying garbage day, and it's become this sort of jokey cult thing. But
I'm going to have to see that then.
Yeah, I would fast forward the first 45 minutes, though, because that's the movie you're in.
It's like, I've seen this one before.
I've seen that and I've been in that. I hope you get residuals from the second one as well, then.
I actually do. I signed something with Screen Actors Guild and I do get residuals. They're not a lot, but yeah, it's kind of fun to get them.
Fantastic.
Go to the bank and show off.
Yeah, right, exactly. So along with Graduation Day, which was obviously very early in your career as well, this is a classic of the slasher genre. Do you like slasher films as a general, or were you more different strains of horror?
I kind of liked I did like Texas Chainsaw Massacre,
mm-hmm.
but I really liked the old ones, like when Vincent Price did Murder in the Rue Morgue and Wax Museum.
Yeah.
And Alfred Hitchcock Presents. Some more like the ones where there's this suspense of really, why is this happening? What's going to happen next?
Yeah.
Not the formula where it's like, you know, you have sex and you die, and you're a bad girl and you die, or you're doing drugs and you die, and that. I kind of like the ones where it's more suspense in there.
Yeah. So the more European tinge ones, I guess. The American ones tend to be very moralistic, I suppose, and they're sort of
They do. Yeah, the European ones are so much better.
I'm actually a big fan of the genre as a whole, but I like all sorts of different aspects of it. One of the questions that was raised, I'm doing the show, the review portion of the show with a good friend of mine. We went along, as I said, to the Fangoria screening. And he was joking afterwards about the fact that the house where you filmed that scene seemed to have a lot of tigers and tiger imagery on the wall. So I just wonder, where was that filmed? Was it a set, or was it...
In Silent Night, Deadly Night?
Yeah, in Silent Night, Deadly Night.
It was a set, but I have a feeling it was someone's house.
Right.
They're like tigers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in Utah.
Yeah.
You know, where there's a lot of Mormons. So
right.
I guess maybe they were a Leo, their astrological sign, but it was, I remember that now, very weird they had all those tigers around.
It may have been I don't know whether it was a hunting thing or whether it was just the 70s, but it was that kind of thing. Because it was
the
wood
paneling. It was the 70s, I think.
Yeah, the wood paneling gives it away, I think.
Oh, yeah, it sure does.
Whose idea was the pool table, and was it as uncomfortable as it looked?
If I remember right, it wasn't a comfortable surface to be doing that on.
No.
It was very uncomfortable, and it was the writer and director's idea to do it on the pool table for some reason. I guess they found that erotic.
Yeah.
And it was their idea, because they had to have the antlers go through my stomach. It was their ideas that I would pull on my pants instead of a woman pulling on her top to go upstairs.
Right. Yeah. Plus, they get more exposure then for the next few minutes while you're being chased around, I guess.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There's a little extra boob action going on.
Yeah. I was surprised. Obviously, I watched a few of your interviews to hear that you were, nervous or shy or whatever. And yet, I think on screen, you're always seen to be quite a ballsy performer, Is that something that just happens when you are acting the part and you're on camera, or does it take a lot to kind of psych yourself up for that?
No, I think it's just something that happens. You kind of lose track of like anybody being in there, and you're just acting. It's just, when you turn a video camera on somebody that's shy, they'll do like a striptease or something. It's like, it's very strange. No. Cameras do weird things to people.
Yeah, they can make the most confident people inept, and they can make the most shy people brazen, I suppose.
Yeah, that's a very good analogy. But I just kind of forget everybody's in the room and do what I need to do. I mean, luckily there's a script there, and I know exactly what's going to happen. I know the parameter, so it's not, something that is going to be a surprise to me.
No, of course. And what did they have to do, just lastly, on Silent Night, Deadly Night, what did they have to do to achieve the impaling on antlers thing? I mean, is that actually you hanging up there, or was there a body or something?
Yeah, back then they liked to really torture you.
right.
They put this contraption that came out of the wall that was, I liken it to a bicycle seat, but metal. That kind of jutted out, and I had to straddle it with all my weight without any bicycle pedals, and then they put these antlers in my stomach, and anytime I was breathing, the antlers would just go boing, 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 and move. So I had to keep perfectly still and not breathe, and of course they had to have a nice fight down below me when I had to hold my breath for so long when the two of them fought.
Yeah.
But it was really hard because it was cold in that room, and they kept spraying it with dulling spray, so that fumes of that stuff was horrible.
Oh, I can imagine.
And just being kind of uncomfortable on that thing I was straddling.
Yeah.
So, I definitely have suffered for my craft.
Yes. Well, I mean, luckily it kind of, I suppose if you know anything about the making of movies, when you're watching them, it does come across like you're watching that scene and you get caught up in that scene. But there's also a part of my brain when I'm watching it that goes, oh, poor Linnea, look at her hanging up there. That must be really uncomfortable.
Imagine. That's your movie side where, it's not what it seems like. It's you're thinking, okay, if I was doing this movie, that must be uncomfortable for her.
Right, exactly. So in the same year, you played what I imagine was an even more challenging role in Savage Streets, because not only are you mute and deaf, but you also have an incredibly difficult rape sequence at the beginning there. How did you prepare for that? What was that like to film, if you don't mind me asking?
That was weird. I bought some books on sign language, and I asked some people at a college about some signing, but it was very odd because you would have to look at their mouths or their hands and, be like you couldn't hear anything else. And I felt like Heather. I felt like the girl that was out because I had the kind of clumsy shoes and dress and hairstyle, and all the other girls were styling and groovy and everything. And here I was, a little frumpy and eating ice cream cones. But it was like, it was hard to prepare for the rape scene because they invited like the production people down, and it was like everybody was staring, and it was a little bit uncomfortable.
While you filmed that bit, they had all the production crew and everything?
Yeah.
Oh
yeah,
my goodness.
One day that it should have been a closed set, and I was too young to say, oh, everybody get out of here. I was too intimidated.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't know any better. I was on a learning curve, you know, the hard way. But they invited people down, so that was kind of creepy.
And then you said the guys stayed in character, the jocks?
The guys stayed in character. They were very mean, and you know, I was just like, the one time when they tore my shirt off, it like tore my shoulder because the material didn't really come off. So they did a really good job scaring me.
Yeah, well, I can imagine. Oh, okay, that legitimately sounds horrible.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was going to ask whether the, you know, seeing Linda Blair's character in that, and, you know, her sort of strong, you know, obviously she had been known as a child star in a horror movie, whether her then going on and playing this sort of strong female role model was something that, you know, you were excited by in that film or interested by in that film. Was that something that struck you about that movie, or did you not want any part of it after that, after your bit?
Oh no, I thought it was great. I loved like her scenes when she's like getting dressed to go get those guys. It's such a great scene where you see all the instruments of torture being laid out and her zipping her boot and
yeah.
And her cleavage and her little quips to the guys when she's going to kill them. I love it all.
Yeah, it's funny because cult movies, horror movies, B-movie action movies, that kind of stuff, you know, while they often get credited of being very sexist or misogynist, they rarely get credited for actually they give more strong roles to women than mainstream movies, certainly back then, it seems.
Yeah, they did. It was all about, it wasn't until the first film that I remember of a strong woman was Alien with Sigourney Weaver.
Right, yeah.
Before it was the guys were in charge and they were the tough ones and Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone ruled, and then all of a sudden Linda Hamilton was in Terminator and she was like buff and taken over, and Sigourney Weaver, and it started to grow that they liked tough chick.
Yeah, because I always think of people like Pam Grier, Linda Blair, yourself.
Oh, yeah.
You know, even Jamie Lee Curtis in the Halloween series to some extent, or the first couple anyway, that, you know, there's more strength to those women that would then, like you say, then bleed into these mainstream movies or Terminator and Alien and things like that that would then become bigger box office. But I think initially those, it's very interesting that cult and horror tends to be this breeding ground of strong female, while also being very exploitative as well. You can't, you know, you can't really turn away from that either, unfortunately.
Right. And another film that was back then that, you know, showed a woman, the men getting the better of her and her getting back, was I Spit on Your Grave. I love that film too.
Right, of course, yeah.
It showed her total vindictive revenge on those guys.
Yeah. No, and that it's I think it's great that those genre movies allow that. I think it's forward thinking in their own weird exploitive way.
Exactly.
So imagine out of all of your roles, and we touched on this a bit earlier, that the character of Trash from the film Return of the Living Dead is one of the most enduring. And I'm sure you get asked about this all the time, so I apologize if you're having to say
That's the same stuff.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that character in particular, and what was it about that movie that you think really struck a chord?
Well, I don't know what it is about that character, except I think she represents what a lot of people would like to do in life and just kind of say, oh, fuck that. You know, I want to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
But the movie, just like, it was the right time. Everything was aligned. It was a combination of the cast, the director, the writer, which was the director, the music, the art direction, just everything worked. The effects, just everything worked in that movie so well. And it seems to be, I don't know if it's just because I love it so much, but it seems timeless because of all that.
Yeah. It seems, what's interesting is that Night of the Living Dead obviously defined a certain type of zombie film that hadn't been seen before. And it's interesting that it's not until Return of the Living Dead, which obviously references Night of the Living Dead as if it was real, that you get the next shift in zombie film culture, which is obviously the introduction of A, zombies talking, but B, more importantly, the idea of brains. And that has just become something that, you know, if you see a cartoon with a zombie in it, or if you see like a zombie doll or a toy or something like that, it's all about the brains now. Zombies eat brains. And that comes from Return of the Living Dead. I mean, that's entirely the invention of that movie. So,
yeah, you're right. That's, somebody brought that up about a year ago, and I didn't even realize that. Really, but you're right, which is so cool. And you know, they have the fast zombies, the slow zombies, the people that like the fast ones, the slow ones. I liked in Return of the Living Dead that the zombies thought and talked. That was kind of fun.
Yeah,
that made it even scarier that they could almost have the intelligence of when they were alive.
Right, and that's something that Romero had dabbled in Day of the Dead with the Bub character and the idea of him being able to use a weapon, which is obviously frightening, and then it's obviously expanded on in Return of the Living Dead. I think it's really interesting that Night and Return of, obviously they're linked by, is it John Russo?
John Russo, yes.
Yeah, who links the two. But it's interesting that they're both, they both define a very strong section of that genre. And really, it wouldn't be until 28 days later, I would guess, that, or maybe the Dawn of the Dead remake, that would then change it again with the sort of fast-paced zombies and things. But
I really liked the fast-paced one where, because you don't know where it's coming from. The camera's moving so fast and it's just frantic. It's almost like what you'd feel like if you were in a situation like that.
Yeah, exactly. And I asked some, I think you re-shared this actually, but I asked some fans on the Facebook page to contribute some questions. And in fact, one of them we were just talking about, my friend Jonesy in the UK, he asked how you felt about Return of the Living Dead now and what was the working relationship like with the cast and crew on the film?
It was good. It was different for everybody. I know a lot of people had trouble with Dan O'Bannon, but I didn't have any trouble with him. I just did what he said and, you know, went along with the program because I really trusted him. There were some that there were arguments, throwing things, just a lot of things because of the tension, because we had the parameters of just bringing it in on a certain budget and certain time, and Dan's mind is so big and he wanted to get all that on screen, and it was a lot of stress for him. Yeah. So I think that's why a lot of arguments and things like that arose.
But you personally, you had an okay experience with that?
I had a great experience. I mean, cool. Besides being really cold, again, buried in mud, getting strep throat, just kind of suffering even more than Silent Night, Deadly Night, and having that makeup on my face and on my body, I am so happy and glad that Stanzi Stokes had me come in again and read for the part, because I'm just very proud of that part.
Well, it's a good iconic look, isn't it, with the hair and, you know, obviously everyone talks about the grave dancing scene, but just in general the look of it, not so much the nudity, but just the way it looks. It's very a sort of iconic look with the red hair and then the pale skin, and it's just got a good kind of punk aesthetic to it, I think.
Yeah, it did, and it's kind of like what all teenagers would like to do, and and have fun going to a graveyard, and of course you're immortal then when you're that age, so you don't think of death, and well, I thought of death a lot, but you don't think of it like you go when you're in your 60s and 70s. It's a whole different thing.
Right.
You're not so quick to go to the cemetery. So it's like, it was fun because these kids were like just immortal in their own minds. And then things turned around.
Yeah, and it all went pear-shaped. They all got in trouble. Jonesy also wanted to know, are you planning on doing any UK conventions soon, or have you got any great convention stories?
I would love to. I'm hoping somebody will ask me over there. I haven't done I did a movie called Cannibals over there, but that was like close to 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And then almost 20 some years ago, I did a media tour for, it was called The Imp over there, Sorority Babes in the Slam Ball Bowl-O-Rama.
Yeah.
And Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers.
Yeah, that was
over
a big
there.
That was
and it
a
was
big rental.
A fun time. I went to Forbidden Planet and signed autographs. And boy, if somebody knows how to get me over there, I'd love to come over because I love the English. They love horror, and it's just great fun.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, it's funny. With hindsight, people have, I think, divide movies up more into A movies and B movies now than they ever used to. Because I remember going to my local video store as a teenager and Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers being on the same level, the same shelf, the same area as whatever the Hollywood A picture was that was out at the
time.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, the small independent video stores tended not to divide them. Once you got Blockbuster, they tended to have 50 copies of whatever the mainstream was and then a back cat copy of a B movie if you were lucky. But my video store, which is a small town, had Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers right there, like right next to Big or whatever the movie was. I don't know what the movie was.
Oh, I love it.
You know, right next to whatever the A movie was. I don't know this gentleman, but he asked on the website, Paul Michael Marquez, his name is.
Okay.
He said, because of some of the nude scenes that you've done in films, were there any situations with actors on your movies either being awkward or forward with you after filming, or have you been lucky with professionalism?
I've been really lucky with professionalism, and I kind of tease the guys. I think the guys are a lot more shy maybe than the women.
Yeah.
And I'll just give them a hard time about it. I'll be saying, well, everybody's going to be looking at you, not me. And, you know, just give them a hard time about it. And usually nobody's been forward with me. And everybody's been professional. I've been very lucky that way. And the guys are, like I said, very shy about it.
That's good to know. I would have guessed sort of that answer, because I think guys, as much as they like to talk a lot, I think when confronted with the situation would probably be like, oh, okay, so this is happening then.
Oh, yeah. This one guy, it was really funny on Creepazoids. He was going to the gym because he had a shower scene with me, and he was going and working out every day at 6 a.m. and, you know, we'd go into the set like at 7:30, and every day he went and went and went. And so after we did the shower scene, he let up on going to the gym. And about 5 days later, I said to him, I said, you know, we've got to do the shower scene today. And I looked, about 5 minutes later, he was around the corner doing push-ups and everything. So I think the guys are a lot more vain and you know, really want to look good for it.
Yeah. Well, we've got nothing else to show off. So I think that's probably the issue there. He also asks if you ever get back to Davenport, Iowa, or if you still have friends there.
I don't really. I have a cousin by blood there. Marriage. I'm sorry.
Right.
But I don't really get back there. It's been a long time. I've been to Iowa filming, but I haven't been to Davenport per se in years.
Yeah, I don't know if he asked that because he's from there. That was just a question he put on the site.
But Davenport is beautiful. When I remember it, it's, you know, on the river, the Mississippi River, and I think it was a really good place to grow up.
Yeah, I've sadly only driven through the state. We used to live out west, and we drove cross country. So I've driven through the state, but I've never stopped. I mean, apart from at a sort of roadside motel,
I don't blame you.
Never traveled.
Like foreign.
Well, it was all part of that sort of. Is it the I-80 that goes right through the country? That we were on, somewhere like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was all part of that. We just drove straight through. But no, I mean, it was. I think it was snowing at the time. I think it was.
Oh my god!
It was late February, early March. So I think it was cold and
probably. It cold there.
Yeah, Christopher wants to know if there were any roles that you tried out for but didn't get, and how did you become comfortable with your body as an actress? Are the two things he wanted.
Let's
to talk
see.
About.
I tried out for Teen Wolf. I didn't get that. I tried out for Howard the Duck. I didn't get that. I tried out for the music to. Not Flashdance, the one that Jerry Bruckheimer did afterward.
Footloose. Is it Footloose?
No, not Footloose. What was it? Oh, I can't remember the movie.
Was it another dancing one, or was it a?
It wasn't another dancing one. Oh man.
Was it Days of Thunder or something like that?
No, it wasn't Days of Thunder. I think that was before, or something like that. It'll come to me. But I did try out for the music part in that.
Yeah.
And then with my body, I guess I just felt comfortable with it because my dad was a doctor and they had a very, you know, more open feeling about your body is your body and it's not something horrible or something to have to cover up and be ashamed of and that sort of thing. So I grew up in that kind of a lifestyle. Not that they were nudists or anything, but they just didn't make a big deal about, oh my God, you know, shut the door, you know, you can't see anybody naked.
Yeah, no, that's healthy. We were very much the same. Yeah, completely. My good friend Ralph Santiago, he just wanted to say something. He wanted to tell you that a certain scene of yours in Night of the Demons, which I'm sure you know which scene he's referring to, is the reason that he is who he is, Disturbed, and he'd like to thank you for it.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad I did that to him. That's great.
That's Ralph to a T.
And I know too, and boy, that was my favorite shade.
Yes, indeed. No, that scene's fantastic. From the moment that you sort of change in the mirror to that then whole sequence that goes on with you as the demon, that's crazy. And that, in fact, that character in Night the Demon, she has some sass to her. She has some sort of before she becomes a demon, she has some sort of strength and
yes, that's true.
Sass
that's
to
true.
Her, yeah.
She has power over the guys.
Right, exactly, which is great. That's a fantastically fun little movie. I love that movie. Joe Mazzotta on the website, he's interested to know how you became involved with animal rights and when you became a vegan.
I think it was about 1980s, probably 1985, I became a vegan. And I became involved in animal rights when I saw this documentary. It was Hidden Crimes, it was called, and it was in black and white. And I never knew a lot of stuff was happening, like animal testing and the army doing, you know, ballistic stuff with dogs and things. I didn't know about the cosmetic testing and just the cruelty the farming and all that industry does. So it just opened up my eyes and I said, well, I want to do everything I can to make this stuff go away, at least be part of making it going away. But that was a real powerful video I saw, Hidden Crimes.
Yeah. And is there a place where, you know, fans of yours or whatever can kind of support that? Is there charities you would suggest? Or?
Well, I suggest PETA because they're the biggest.
Right.
It's PETA. And there's one in L.A. called Last Chance for Animals, Krista Rose. They're very, very good. And then on my website, I've got the Wildlife Waste. In L.A., the Wildlife Waste Station, and it's the Wildlife Center in Florida.
Yeah.
They all, you know, come out to your house and save animals. I had some baby possums that their mother died, and I had to get them off the mother's nipples, which is really hard to do with a possum.
Really? I didn't know.
Oh, they suck them in. It's crazy. But wow. They come out, and they take them, and they rehabilitate them and let them go then when they're strong enough.
Oh, excellent. That sounds fantastic. Yeah, I know people listening, they might be, you know, they might want to take that further. So it's good to know places they can go.
I mean, one little step after another.
Definitely, definitely. No, I completely agree. So Night of the Demons was brought up. We were talking about that. It's getting a new Blu-ray next year from Scream Factory. So what can you tell us about filming that? And what's it like sort of to see films like that suddenly on this, you know, brand new format and getting all the bells and whistles and the new effects and everything? So
I think it's really great that it's getting the acclaim that it needs, because it really kind of fell back there. It wasn't really well known. There were the real horror people, which maybe we'll get into later, that loved it. And now my problem is I'm not a big fan for horror movies and movies of watching Blu-ray or high definition, because it takes me out of the experience of that grindy look.
Yes, I know what, I know exactly what you mean, actually, yeah.
It almost makes it seem like I'm behind the scenes, not someone that's just watching a film. And I'm really on the fence about that. I don't have a HD TV because I just like the grindiness of a movie or TV show, unless it's like a wildlife special or something like that.
Right. Yeah, no, I remember when we, like, obviously I was old enough to have quite a big VHS collection when that was the format. And I remember the first time, obviously there was a lot of movies that were banned in England because England had actual censorship. And
yeah, the nasties.
The video nasties, exactly. Yeah. And so, but these movies would be handed around, you know, tame really by today's standards, things like The Evil Dead and Texas Chainsaw Massacre and stuff like that. But they would be handed around on these bootleg VHS that didn't have labels or a fancy cover or anything. They were just like rattly old VHSs that had been watched 15 times, you know, and you would put them in and it would almost be because the video was almost, it was almost scary that you just had the video. You didn't even have to watch the film. You just knew that this was a thing kind of born of evil, you know?
Yeah, you're right. That's true.
It had a whole thing to it, you know? It had a whole, and then when you put it in, like you say, it was grainy and it was grimy and you couldn't see sort of, now when you watch The Evil Dead, particularly on Blu-ray, you see all the effects. It's all cleaned up. It's all too bright. Everything's too bright. And I just, some movies I think works great on the format, and I think every format has its benefits and every format has its negatives, but you know, I do agree with you that those old horror movies, the ones from the 70s and the 80s, it's nothing like watching them on VHS or even projected, like a 16 mil projection of them or something is fantastic.
I agree with that. I definitely agree with that.
But was it, how long was the shoot on that? Was it all sort of in that one location? Or?
It was all in that one location except for the grocery store. And let me think if there was anything else shot. Just some driving scenes they had in there. But it was all shot in this actual house that was in a really bad part of town. We had security and everything there.
Yeah.
Shot all at night. They duvetained all the windows, so it was all dark in there. And smoke machines, the whole bit where your nose has black in it when you're done at the end of the day. And it was a really good experience because we were kind of like just a group, and we each had our little room that we had to change in and lay down in when we got a chance. So it was a fun shoot. It really was.
Yeah, it's like a haunted. It's like a good haunted house movie. You never quite know what's going to happen next.
It was kind of a haunted house.
Yeah, like it just shifts from one move to the next. And you never know kind of what grotesque thing the next possessed person is going to do.
That's true.
It's good fun. You were in a band, The Skirts, and have composing and song credits on some films. What role does music play in your life? You also reformed the band recently, right?
Yes, yes. Hedy Pomar and I are the main people. She plays bass. I play guitar. We both do vocals. We both write. Like, we write our own songs and things like that.
Yeah.
And we played L.A. for a lot of times. In fact, we got, when I went in to read for Cheech and Chong's Nice Dreams,
yeah,
I played him the theme for Charlie's Angels, and he laughed. He thought that was really funny, and he put the whole band in the movie, Nice Dreams.
Yes.
So it was kind of a fun, really fun thing for us, because we were very young, and, you know, it was a big set where we had our own trailers, and we felt like rock stars. It was great.
Yeah.
And I have the song still out on, they're on, I switched them to DVD. It was on a vinyl, which I know is making a comeback, but from vinyl to DVD, because it was a lot better.
Yeah. And so you're still playing, you're still writing, and what sort of influence is that? What kind of, do you have music all the time, or is it just sort of a hobby, side hobby type thing?
Right now, because the movies and conventions and doing everything kind of took over, it's more of when I can do it, right, and when Hedy can do it, because we don't live that close anymore. So it life gets in the way sometimes. You think the older you get, the easier things are going to get, but sometimes it's not that way.
Yeah.
But luckily, last year I was busy so much of the time, I didn't get a chance really to do much with the music. But we're hoping to. We hope to, like, get someone to finance another album and start writing some more. I always need a reason to write. I'm not one of those people that are good at, like, oh, I'm going to write a song.
Right.
I used to be, but now it's like I need a purpose to.
No, I know exactly what that's like. Yeah, I used to, I'm a musician, I write a lot of stuff, and actually doing the show, it meant that every week I was sort of, well, I have no inclination to write a song, what am I going to write a song about? And then I suddenly had a brainwave and thought, I know, I'm going to write a song each week that's about whatever we talk about on the show. So suddenly it became a whole new area of inspiration. So I started writing film music or film-based songs, comedy, you know, comedy film songs.
And, oh, that's great.
Putting them on the show. So that's where I found my inspiration from.
Oh, that's a great thing. Yeah, when you've got something, and it's hard when you play an instrument because you kind of miss the other instruments. You just sit there, oh, I'm just playing alone, whereas the band gives you this feel of, like, strength and...
Yeah.
And everything. It's a whole different thing.
Definitely. What can you tell us about the horror workout video? How did that come about, and what was the reaction to it when it came out?
Well, I was working on Murder Weapon, a David Dakota film.
Yeah.
And Ken Hall, who wrote a lot of films back then and was on the set visiting, he does foam fabrication now. He came on the set. And I was doing a scene with a big, it wasn't an axe. It was more like what do you call those things? Not a hatchet, but like something heavy that you hit people on the head with. A mallet.
That's a mallet. It. Okay. Like, okay. Yeah.
And of course, you know, you don't do it one time. You do it a number of times again and again and again. And I was like, oh, my arms are sore. And he goes, I've got an idea. He goes, why don't we do a horror workout? Because working, you know, doing these horror films is a workout because you're running a lot. You're having to fight a lot. You're having to deal with chainsaws and come after people with chainsaws. And so we thought it would be a great idea to do like three different skits on it, and also put some of my movie clips in there, and just made it a two-day wonder horror workout with sexily scant, sexy women and zombies and the whole works.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And do you remember, like, and you just put that out on VHS at the time, I guess?
Oh, yeah, it was on VHS, and then just last year... it was remastered, and we put commentary on there, and it turned out amazingly good. We had no idea how it was going to look after it had been in that tin for so long. We were very nervous, but it turned out fantastic.
And that's now out. Is that available on your website? Because you've just...
Yes, it's on my website, which is www.LinneaQuigley.tv.
Right. And that's a new thing. That's
something... that on the website. We only did 1,000 of them. So right. It's limited number of 1,000.
So I've got to get my copy now then.
You got to get your copy now.
I will be. I will be indeed. Excellent. I'll be picking that up.
Work out.
So that's fantastic. Yeah, I'll need a workout. I sit at an office desk all day eating cake. So yeah, I'll need a workout. Are there any genres you've ever wanted to work in but not yet had the chance? Or are you just happy in the sort of horror genre?
I'm happy in the horror genre. I would like to work on some more, like I like action films, like I mentioned, Linda Hamilton in Terminator, or Sigourney Weaver in Aliens, like a part, something like that would be really fun to do.
Right. So someone needs to write you a...
Something like a spy movie or like a female James Bond, something like that would be really fun to do. I haven't done yet.
I'm surprised no one, like after you did your fitness thing and some of the movies you've done where you're kind of a bit more kick-ass and stuff, I don't know why someone hasn't come to you and pitched that to you and said, why don't you do it?
Well,
that's a surprise.
There was until The Walking Dead, there was a big stigma of people would say when you did horror films, oh, you do those kind of films. So you kind of were like, made to feel, or they wanted you to feel like you were stigmatized, that you just did those type of films. You didn't do You've Got Mail or something like that.
Right.
So
you wouldn't want to.
Until The Walking Dead, like I was talking about before, we might get around to it. There's the real horror fans, and then there's the fans that watch The Walking Dead and they think they're horror fans.
Yes.
But they don't have a clue about, you know, movies like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I Spit on Your Grave, or
and how do you
Lucio Fulci, or anything.
And how do you feel about those guys?
Well, I just let them say their piece, and I go collect my paycheck and do what I like to do.
Right. No, I agree. No, I understand. I mean, you know... I've been into movies now for as long as I can remember, but I being on the internet, obviously putting yourself out there and doing a show like this or whatever, you hear all sorts, you know, all
yes.
sorts of opinions from all sorts of people. And
yes.
you get some staggeringly misinformed views.
Yeah, and it's appalling what people will say.
Right.
I guess it's to make themselves feel better or something like that, that there are these, you know, because I've noticed just at conventions, there's the true blue fans, and you can tell them apart now. They kind of have a different look. And there's the ones that are the new nouveau fans, and now it's chic, so they're clustering to the conventions.
Yeah, and it would be better if there was more, like one of the things I've tried to maintain during the internet and obviously doing the show and being on Twitter and things is a sense of positivity. There's so much negativity out there. And so, you know, I think anyone who, you know, we all had to start somewhere. So I think that anyone who kind of comes to a thing genuinely, even if it is through something like The Walking Dead,
yeah.
As long as they then kind of expand from that. I mean, I remember when I first heard the Beatles, the most popular, well-known, you know, billions of fans around the world type band, right? But I heard
yes.
them from my mum. Now, if I just stuck with them, or if I just gone on to like boy bands or whatever, or guitar-based bands or whatever it was, that would be fine, but it wouldn't really be expanding anything. But if you read into it and you find out, oh, they were fans of Chuck Berry or Fats Domino or whatever it is, and then you expand through there and then you find out those guys were into blues music from the 30s and the 40s, and then you find out about Americana and roots and jazz and all that stuff. If you expand out from something very popular like The Walking Dead and go, okay, Greg Nicotero, who's now obviously big-time producer and effects guy on The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah, and he's a sweetheart, yes.
Yeah, fantastic guy. If the right kind of fan, to me, and I'm not trying to be snobby, but the right kind of fan is someone who goes, okay, Greg Nicotero or Frank Darabont, who are these guys, and looks into their past, looks into what they've done, looks into where they come from, like I did with the Beatles, or like you might do with, you know, a comedy or whatever it is that they're kind of... So I think that's... But people who are just doing it because it happens to be trendy at this, I don't really understand that. I've never been one to kind of go with trends. I try and either get out ahead of them or be like 10 years too late.
Right. No, I agree. And everybody's fawning over Daryl. And, you know, it's like, it's just, it's funny. It's like, you know, there's a couple of those series that are kind of like that. And it's more of the faux fan.
Yeah, I know, I do. And do you get, I mean, I suppose they would they come up to you, though? What would they, it would be more hardcore or more informed people would come up to yourself? Because, I mean, I wouldn't imagine, do faux fans sort of watch things like Return of the Living Dead or Creepazoids or?
No, I don't think they do. I think they watch whatever's in style at the time.
Right.
You know, they watch True Blood or they watch...
I can't... All these series, I can't... They're not ones I really like. I mean, I watch...
Yeah.
I watch The Walking Dead just because I feel as a zombie fan, you should kind of support it. But it's... I can't say it's one of my favorites. I find the writing very boring. I hate to say it, but I do. I rewatched Day of the Dead again the other day, which is a movie that gets lots of stick, but I think is far better than most people give it credit for.
It's
great film, the original, and the dialogue in that, the characters in that, the arguments they have, because Romero makes it all about the humans. He doesn't make it about the zombies particularly. He makes it about the humans and how petty and silly we all are. And they're the characters you need on The Walking Dead. That's the script you need on the, you know, something with a bit of pep, something with a bit of excitement about
it. Right.
They seem to think that if they have a big violent scene, that's excitement. But it means nothing if it's not based on any real character development you care about, you know?
Exactly.
Anyway, I'm going off on one, but...
No, that's very true. It's very interesting that you said that, yes.
Okay, so talk about fans. So you've got hardcore horror fans. So have you got any convention stories? What are your favorite things about your fans in particular?
Like you said, they're very loyal and they're very, most of them I found are just so animal friendly. If they hurt an animal on screen, even if it's, you know, I mean, it is faked, but they get very upset. And I've had things where I've taken fans that want to go to get animals out of the shelters and get them homes but it's really funny, you know, they'll be talking, they'll go, oh yeah, that, you know, the scene in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, they saw the guy, that was a great scene. And then they'll be talking and they'll go, but when they killed this dog in this other movie, I didn't like it. I just wanted to leave the theater. Yeah. They're really great people. Well, and I've met a lot of great people and remained friends with a lot of people for many years that I met at conventions.
Yeah, I mean, everyone I've spoken to, you know, and I've had the pleasure of speaking to Barbara Crampton and William Sadler and some other people who've been throughout the genre, they've all been lovely. They've all been really lovely, really nice people, really, you know, friendly homebody types. And it's really great that they're so supportive of us, just in the same way that we've been, you know, supportive of them and their careers. And that's wonderful. And, you know, you're exactly the same, very supportive, very friendly, very communicative. And it's, you know, it's a pleasure for us as fans, first and foremost, to, you know, the internet allows us this kind of...
Yeah.
access. And it's just, it's, you know, it's weird, because if I went back to my 16-year-old self and said, oh, yeah, you're going to spend an hour on the phone with Linnea Quigley, I'd probably, you know, it wouldn't believe me. I'd be like, shut up, you know. It wouldn't be something that I could possibly believe.
Right, and like if I went back to my 16-year-old self going, oh, you'll be doing movies, I'd be like, no way.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
It's just wonderful the way that the world has worked out. But I was going to say that... talking about true horror fans, are there any films, because I, you know, I watched a lot of interviews in preparation for this, and it's an odd tightrope you walk, because you want to make sure that the people who are listening hear about the films they love. So they're gonna, you know, they're gonna want to know about Return of the Living Dead, and they're gonna want to know about Night of the Demons and movies like that, and Savage Streets and things, and obviously we're doing the Christmas episode, but are there any movies that you wish people would talk about that they just don't talk about, that are personal favorites of yours that you love?
Films? Let's see. Most of them they do talk about. A lot of people don't talk about a lot of the Italian films, which I think are really good. And I'm pretty sure they came before our zombie films, even.
Right.
There's a lot of really good ones out there.
Are you meaning like the Argento and the Bava?
The Argento and Fulci and all those guys.
But no, I mean, they're great. And we're definitely going to do episodes on them. And I've been on other shows that have talked about them. I'm a big, big giallo fan. But I meant more specifically like movies that you've been in. Like I was talking about. I was talking to my friend Doug the other day, and he was talking about like movies like Robot Ninja and things that people wouldn't necessarily bring up. Or I noticed you were in the Innocent Blood, the John Landis movie, and things like that. And I just meant that you obviously get asked all the time about the movies that we've talked about tonight, and it's been great. And fans want to hear about those movies because they're the popular ones. They're the, you know, they're the fan favorites. But are there any ones out of your filmography that you were like, I wish someone would ask me about, you know, Robot Ninja, or, you know, as you mentioned earlier, the Sorority Babes in the Slime Ball Ballorama and stuff like that?
Mainly Sorority Babes in the Slime Ball Ballorama, because I really like that film. And I think it was a good job, and it was fun, and it was just a really good romp.
Yeah.
And then there's another one that very few people have seen that is a really fun film, too, called The Girl I Want. It could be because people really haven't seen it, but it's a really good film. So when people get to see it, I'd like them to ask me about that.
Okay, The Girl I Want?
The Girl I Want, yes.
Okay. Do you know when that was from?
Oh, that was close to when the Sorority Babes and all that was filmed.
Okay.
Many moons ago.
Many moons ago. I was just interested. I mean, I suppose the two we could have talked about would have been Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers and Sorority Babes, which
I've also seen. Yeah, Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers, yes.
Which I've also seen, but it just, I didn't want to keep you all night. You know?
You've done
so many fantastic movies. I could talk about tons of them. But
I'm going to be directing this spring. I mean,
yeah,
so.
I was going to say you've got 6 movies out this year alone, and you've got even more coming out next year. Tell us about them.
Well, I'm going to be directing. Herschel Gordon Lewis is involved with it, and he's going to be doing segments. I'm one of the directors, and there's 4 other horror icons, which I can't mention who they are right now.
Right.
But in the spring, I'm going to be doing that. That'll be really, it's Slaughterhouse, and it's going to be really interesting to do that. There's Blood Drive that's a possible one I'm going to be doing. Something for David Dakota, I don't even know the name of it. Just a lot of different things that are on the block. Hopefully Big Fat Crazy Ethel, people will put the rest of the money in so we can finally do it. And then a lot will come out, like Demonica, the musical I did, The Unquenchable Thirst for Boner Juice.
That's fantastic.
Know, funny title. Hunters. It's hard to remember the It Came from the Ether.
And are you going to
trying to think of the ones I've done? Disciples and Blood Story.
Right.
And I probably forgot one or two, but there's a lot of them that are going to be coming out.
And people can find out all about that on your website,
on
Facebook
my website
page.
They go there and they can find out where I'm at conventions. They can find out all kinds of different things about me.
Nice. Excellent. Yeah, so I think that's all the questions I had for you. I just want to say thanks ever so much for being on the show. It's been a fantastic pleasure to talk to you,
thrill. Thank you. It's been great talking to you. Just listening to your voice is amazing.
Yes, apparently, yes, people like the voice, so they say. Yeah. But no, it's been an absolute dream talking to you, Linnea, and I know the fans are going to absolutely love the episode once we put it up. And thanks ever so much for you've been retweeting everything that I've been posting and putting it up on your Facebook page and stuff. I mean, something we both put up the other day got like 1,500 views already, which is just fantastic.
That's
for
great.
The show. So,
isn't that great?
It is. It's really great. All right, thanks ever so much for your time and have a good evening.
Thank you and good night.
There are men. And then there are Second Unit Podcast Men. The podcast you've just been listening to is part of the Second Unit Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at 2upn.blogspot.com or on Facebook under the Second Unit Podcast Network. Our fantastic list of shows include Drunk on VHS, We Came from the Basement, No Budget Nightmares, The After Movie Diner, Dr. Action and the Kick-Ass Kid, and Bloodbaths and Boomsticks. Take one podcast into the shower. Don't be a blithering idiot, Alan. We can give you the multiple podcast cleansing system all in one place that your hair deserves. Our programming is available across all platforms, from iTunes to Podomatic, TalkShoe to Stitcher, so you have absolutely no excuse. Listen today, and a free naked person of your choice will be shipped from Thailand to your door in a matter of weeks. The Second Unit Podcast Network, bringing you the action and leaving the boring stuff to the other guys. Bloody hell, who does a girl have to blow around here to get a decent beverage?